Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Great to have you with us on Sunday night, all around Australia, through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. This week, the federal government gave some insight into possible future directions for welfare services in Australia. It released the interim report on welfare reform, put together at the charge of the Minister for Social Services, Kevin Andrews. Whilst stressing that this is not an official government document, the panel responsible for the report, under the leadership of Patrick McClure, a former head of Mission Australia, has framed their recommendations with a mind to policy implementation. Well, tonight we're going to have a look at what may become the basis for a fundamental reorientation of welfare delivery in Australia. What's the philosophy and direction of the report, and what sort of Australia does it envision? Joining us for our panel discussion, it's welcome to Lynn Hatfield-Dodds, the National Director of Uniting Care, who's online from the Northern Territory. Lynn, good to have you with us. Oh, wonderfully clear line. And in our Canberra studio, the Acting Executive Director of Anglicare Australia, Roland Manderson. Roland, good to have you with us.
Yeah, great.
And we hope to be joined in a few moments' time by John Falzon, CEO, National CEO of St Vincent de Paul. But first, Lynn Hatfield-Dodds, let me ask you, you're somebody who's knocked around this area for a while. In your position as the current position in Uniting Care as National Director, you've seen many reports come and go. What are the key elements of this one?
Well, one of the things, there's some similarities and some differences to previous ones. One of the key similarities, I guess, is Patrick McClure, who's heading up the review team, headed up a review team for a coalition government about 15 years ago, looking at the state of Australia's welfare system. So that's a similarity. One of the differences between when Patrick reviewed our welfare system 15 years ago or so and now is that this current review process is a lot less transparent and a lot less engaged with the broader community than the previous one was. And indeed, the Australian government have described it in terms of, you know, somewhat of an internal review. So I think they deliberately have not opened it to everybody, although now they've put out the interim report, there's a six-week process that's calling for submissions. So I suspect that they adjusted how they were thinking about this particular inquiry on the basis of a lot of feedback from many Australians and Australian organisations who wanted to have a say. That's a good thing. We also have a Senate inquiry running right at this moment that will report back to the Senate early in September on welfare reform. So I think with those two processes in train, I'm hopeful there'll be enough space and enough time for everybody who wants to have a say into the shape of a renewed and refreshed and hopefully refocused welfare system to be able to do so.
Yes, we should re-emphasise that this is an interim report and that consultation process will take place. Roland, your initial impressions?
Well, I guess my initial impressions are a little bit influenced by the climate around which this report has, or within which this report has kind of surfaced, which is there has been a lot of changes recently to the budget. There are a lot of things forecast to happen which are going to make life very tough for young people out of work, for a lot of people at the moment who are dependent on income support. So, and over the years, in fact, as their income growth slows down, I think that there's some hidden pain in the existing budget if it all gets through. So in that context then, looking at this, it's kind of easy to see, if you like, what this may not be, in that it may not address any of those kind of problems that have been created. But what it does do, what it has got, is a very broad opening for us to get in, and as Lynn says, to engage with the conversation about when it says encourage people into employment, we have the opportunity to talk about what that means. And what I'm talking about, the context, is that encouraging people in employment at the moment seems to be about cutting people's money if they don't have a job for periods of time, or making things tougher for them to somehow drive them to try harder. What we understand by encouraging people to into work is to understand where they're coming from, to give them the support they need, to find a way for them to believe that the kind of work that's available for them, and then provide them with the support when they get into it. So I think that there's a framework in this review that we can use in a really constructive way, but I think it's going to be a challenge.
You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking about the interim report on welfare reform released to the Minister of Social Services, Kevin Andrews, this week and compiled by Patrick McClure, former head of Mission Australia. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask questions, if you've any experience in the welfare area and want some detailed observations, 1300 800 222 is the number to call, 1300 800 222, where we'll take your calls, and probably in about 15 minutes. We'll put you to air. If you're in South Australia or the Northern Territory, give us a ring straight away. The rest of Australia, just hang on for 15 minutes or so. 1300 800 222. Those initial impressions, Lynn, you referred to how this report has been put together. Do we know who worked with Patrick McClure on putting it together?
We do. There's two other people on the review team, and they are Sally Sinclair, who's the CEO of the National Employment Services Association, and with a huge amount of experience and expertise around employment programs and employment pathways for people who've been unemployed for a long time. And Wesley Aird, who's a past member of the National Indigenous Council, who brings that particular focus. And then, of course, there's quite a large team, I understand, in the Department of Social Services who are supporting those three people on the review team. The other thing I didn't say earlier, John, is that this review, I understand, is focused on working age payments only. So payments like the New Start Allowance and the disability support pension, but not the age pension. So right. It's got a targeted focus in that way.
Right. With the sort of background of the people putting it together, it seems that it's largely drawing, if you've only got three people on this sort of panel, it is largely drawing on the resources of the department, but with a particular focus on the jobs area, given Sally Sinclair's background. Would that be a reasonable observation, Roland?
Sure. It's talking about work at all different levels. And I guess what's interesting there is, like with the disability support pension, the talk about, for some reason, needing to create a different payment for people on disability pension who have a capacity to work is kind of setting people up as those who can and those who can't. And then it could be used to be saying those who can should, and if they aren't, you know, it is their fault, and those who can't, well, there's nothing more we can do for them. So I'm just quite a bit concerned that I think the focus for providing a way for people to participate, to contribute to society, and certainly work is one absolutely the best way, but it is not the only way. But that focus, I think, is really important for people, the working age payments. But I'm concerned that we don't start drawing a line between, you know, those who should and those who don't have to, or some, you know, something like that.
This is a very old debate in Australia. It goes back even into the late 19th century, to the 1890s, when pensions first began to be debated in Australia. And in fact, there was a term at the time, the deserving and undeserving poor. If we if we're looking broadly at the philosophical basis of this, Roland, are you concerned that we may be reintroducing some of that old argument?
And I don't want to say that Sally or Patrick's doing, that that's happening. I just think, again, it's the context. I think we have to be really clear that we believe it's about providing the support for people, the meaningful support for people, and the understanding of where they are and what's happening in their lives. That's the way to get people into work, rather than to say, you don't have work, try harder, we'll push you more. There is some things in this review which can go either way. There's a lot of talk about income management, and as Lynn knows, there isn't really any evaluations yet which come down hard and fast on whether it works or not. Yet there are ways of doing financial counselling and financial literacy which we know do work in terms of helping people manage their money. So there are some elements in this review that could send some flags towards more sticks, you know, and less support. Mm. And I think that that's something we need to address in our feedback in these next 6 weeks.
Lynn, are you seeing any indications of philosophical underpinning of the report, such as I mentioned an older notion, deserving and undeserving poorer? Are there elements there or discerned lineaments that you can see of a philosophical direction here?
Yeah, look, I think it'd be fair to say that this report's come out in the context of a coalition government that's been very clear about their view. You know, I've heard the Prime Minister, the Treasurer, Minister Andrews all make comment multiple times in the public space since the last federal election about their belief that the role of government is to only do for citizens what they can't do for themselves. And they're very clear they want to shrink the role of government, they want to grow the role of civil society, and they want to give more agency to citizens. So none of that is either a good thing or a bad thing, in my view. It's a thing. Labor governments tend to want to grow the reach of government, and I think, you know, a good thing in social democracy is to have a pendulum swinging, so we hopefully end up somewhere in the middle. I think, you know, Roland's highlighted some of the potential concerns, and they are that, you know, when we're all talking about the efficiency and the effectiveness of the welfare system, and there's no doubt at all to anybody who knows anything about Australia's welfare system that it is completely cumbersome, it is too complicated, there are way too many payments, and it's a horrendous system to either navigate as a user or to navigate as a provider of either welfare payments or the services that sit around them. So I guess the things to worry about, you know, if you think of welfare reformers, you know, navigating a reef on a boat, you don't want to crash into things. You want to make sure that payments, that we have well-targeted payments. We don't want to be wasting public money, but the payments need to be adequate. And we know that many, if not most, of our welfare payments are inadequate for task. None of us want to see Australians left languishing on welfare and unable to find work. We want to assist people into work, and as Roland made, I think, a very good point, that those of us that work at the coalface of employment services, family crisis services, housing services, know that, you know, one of the best pathways out of poverty is, in fact, a job, but it needs to be a decent job, it needs to be well enough paid, and we need to encourage and skill people up so that people are going to come off welfare inevitably into low-skill, low-wage jobs. But what we need to make sure as a nation is that we're able to continue to help people develop their skills and education, and the report does talk about that. And we want to make sure that our labour market has enough kind of low-skill entry points with enough step-up places so people can come in like that and then, you know, 5 or 10 years later can be in a job that we know will keep them and their family out of poverty permanently.
Well, what do we see as the pros? Roland, Lynn's just mentioned the cumbersome nature of the system. Mm. And a few of the points that have been made in the interim report is we really need to reduce the complexity and the number of payments and try and get them down to 3 or 4 basic payments. Now, is that a good or a possibly irrelevant direction to be aiming for?
I think simplifying the system and making it easier to navigate and easier to approach, it would be fantastic. We've all been talking about that for years. Government, people who use the services, absolutely, and those of us who kind of work with the services. Yes, please, make it simpler. But it's a little bit tricky because even in this review, which is talking in very broad terms about simplifying, in the discussion about the circumstances of different people, it talks about an allowance for this and an allowance for that. So in recognising people's different circumstances, and I think that's one of the really good things about this report, this interim report, is it does talk a lot about the nuances of people's individual circumstances, and it suggests that we need to find a way of supporting social services to respond to people's individual circumstances and to provide the support that makes sense for them. So I think that simplifying is great, and it certainly is a goal, and somewhere along the line we need to get somewhat more simple in how it works, but it may not be possible to make it as simple as we all wish.
Lynn, what are some of the other useful directions that you'd want to nominate?
Well, I think, first of all, the interim report makes a good case for why reform is needed, and essentially reform is needed. The system's got more complicated, we just talked about that, but also because the world has changed. Women now work, I think more than 65% of us work now, whereas some decades ago, it was well south of 30%. The nature of unemployment has changed. It's gone from short-term and sporadic to, for hundreds of thousands of Australians, being long-term and endemic. And we've in fact seen recently the emergence of third and even fourth generation unemployed Australians. We've seen the emergence of areas of locational disadvantage where entire communities are not just fairly unemployed, but also have much higher levels of mental ill health and of physical ill health. So these things have really changed. The other thing the report talks about is the way our job market is actually skilling up. So there's a pretty big gap between people who've been unemployed for a long time and getting and keeping a job. In terms of directions, they've been a bit cagey. They haven't come up, of course, with very clear directions because it's an interim report, and I guess they're flying some flags. But they do make some points. They talk about the fact that there are currently 20 income support payment types and around 55 supplementary payments available over a range of packages. They're clearly flagging we want to make the system more simple, and we know that. They do note that determining the adequacy of payments is difficult. Well, what we'll be saying, I assume other community sector groups will be saying, is it may be complicated. I'm not sure it's all that difficult. Adequacy needs to be defined as what it takes in an area for a person or a household to live reasonably decently.
So it was determined by Justice Higgins in about 1908.
Indeed.
It was used to be
Indeed.
Called the basic wage. Was it a man, a wife, and two children in a medium level of comfort, or a modest level of comfort?
Modest.
And I think the debate is going to be, I think really this is code for agreeing as a community what a modest rate is, or what a decent floor is, or however we're going to define that. And I would certainly say that the Uniting Care experience is people who are on many of our current welfare payments, it is not a modest rate, it is not a decent floor. We know, you know, the Business Council of Australia, Jennifer Westacott, was out, I think, last year in public saying Newstart is simply not adequate for people to survive. So we need to sort that out. And then the report also talks about three main objectives in the adjustment of payments, and it says to maintain the real value of payments, to maintain their purchasing power, to maintain the relative value of payments, so we ensure that living standards increase along with community changes, and to maintain a coherent system. So I kind of think if they're guiding principles, they're not bad guiding principles at all.
No, that sounds like a very interesting set of guidelines.
One of the ideas that we've put forward, others have put forward as well, was why not have an arm's length process to determine that? Something like the Fair Work Commission or the a Fair Benefits Commission, something like that, or a remuneration tribunal for people on benefits, so that there is some distance, there is some transparency. In the end, the government would have to say what it was prepared to do, but if there was some way which was open and visible in order to explore that and to come up with some decisions about what levels they should be and how they should increase, I think that we would all feel much better than seeing, well, what's happening at the moment is people on Newstart, they spend 122% of their income usually during a year. We did some work.
And it can't be that hard to do, can it? Because we do it for politicians. We do it for a range of people in public life. So it seems to me, Roland's suggestion is a very good one. It's one that many of the churches and their social service organisations have supported for some years now.
Yeah, although one wouldn't have to be too cynical to say that no government is going to wish to surrender that amount of budgetary leverage.
Well, in the end, government would still have the responsibility, but let's at least put it out there and have someone, some reputable organisation, giving the government advice.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia through Radio Australia via the web to the world. We're talking about the interim report on welfare services in Australia released by the Minister Kevin Andrews. He's quick to point out that this is not an official government document. It is merely a think piece put together by Patrick McClure at, of course, the Minister's request, supported by the Department and one or two other nominated individuals. 1300 800 222, have you got any comments on the report and its philosophical directions? Look, we've all alluded to the context of government policy as being something that perhaps is indicative of where this may go. The context of government policy in other areas has been spelled out, particularly by Treasurer Joe Hockey and his potent phrase, we want a country of lifters, not leaners. That has certain overtones about, look, we're going to get tough, and that is also supported by the rhetoric of budget crisis. The degree of that we don't need to talk about, but the certainly the rhetorical thrust is towards we're going to get tough. Now, what does that mean in this context, Lynn? How do you read that as a national CEO of an organisation concerned with those who are at the bottom of this heap?
Well, it's you get conflicting messages at the moment, I think. So the report itself, the interim report, has a very strong thread or theme running through it around strengthening the capability of individuals and families. It talks about building community resilience, and they're very good things. You know, we saw in the budget, though, this year that the government's looking at taking income support payments away altogether for many Australians under the age of 30. So it'll be 6 months off payment, 6 months on payment. I guess we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out. But, you know, right at this point in time, there's very many people across the community sector, including people in the Uniting Care Network, saying that just doesn't seem to make sense in terms of how we're going to proceed. In terms of the lifters, not leaners, you know, one of the great ironies around poverty in Australia today is some of the Australians who are the absolute best at budgeting, the absolute best at getting everything they can out of every dollar they have that they can use or utilise, are people who are on welfare payments and who are, you know, households where nobody has a job. If you talk to any financial counsellor in the country, they'll talk to you about how there's a group of people who have not yet learned how to budget and are learning those skills. But the people who have got the budget skills nailed, who are on those very low payments, are very, very good at working every dollar very, very hard. The issue is there simply isn't enough money. So I think it's easy to stand behind a podium and use the language of lifters or leaders, but to come out into the community and actually look at some of the circumstances that many Australians on welfare payments are living on, many of the circumstances that they are living with great dignity and courage. I think, you know, again, our experience and all the evidence tells you that what's important is getting the welfare system right, but also, and the interim report names this, also making sure that the suite of services and supports that kind of come around a person or a family who are on payments is critically important. And getting the type of service and support, the intensity of it and the duration right is critical. So most people have not suddenly plunged into poverty in a six-week period. It's unlikely that 6 weeks of support is going to help them out. We need to provide long-term supports and services and journey with people to where they can connect, belong and contribute in their communities.
Roland Manderson, where the government has given some indication, where Kevin Andrews has expressed himself on this issue, it has reinforced the sort of toughness rhetoric. You even had a suggestion by the minister that, particularly with regard to this issue of young people that Lynn has been alluding to, that, well, you know, there are young people who spend, you know, a year or so sort of floating around from mate's couch to mate's couch and, you know, want to take it easy. I don't think he suggested that they were sort of all gravitating towards Nimbin and taking the sunshine and surf, but certainly some people would read it that way and have been encouraged to think in those terms, that young people, there's a tendency to be slack off and they needed to be sort of shape up or ship out sort of rhetoric.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because the young people who our services deal with generally are doing things much tougher than that, and those are the ones who come right up against it when it comes to inadequate income, lack of housing. You know, we did a housing survey, we do one every year, 63,000 houses this year. There were 12 that were affordable for young people living on the youth allowance. So, you know, that's 12 out of 63,000. So couch surfing becomes, you know, a pretty necessary strategy in terms of staying, getting ahead. We've just also done some work across our network in terms of what are the programs that they deliver that make a difference for people finding their way into work. And what they told us was it's about, exactly as Lynn says, it's about people acknowledging people's circumstances, but it's also acknowledging the person. It's acknowledging the capacities, the skills, the insights, the experience, the desires, the person themselves, and working with what's going to make a difference for them. So it does get right back down to that personal level to make a difference. And that is in the interim report, I think. You can find that in there if you're looking for it, but you can't really hear that in the kind of the political discussion and the media discussion that we've got going at the moment.
And I think, to be fair to the report, that has alluded to some of these things, even if it is in the appendix. I notice one appendix of the report on trends in income support indicates that of the percentage of the working age population aged 16 to 64 years receiving income support, between 1996 and 2013, the total of all payments going out in income support has dropped from 25% to down nearer 18 to 19%. And some have dropped even lower. The only one that's up significantly, I think, is the aged pension. So that seems to indicate that the report, at least, has a handle on these things.
Yeah, and I think Australia does have... Well, sorry, Ron.
I was just going to say that's the challenge, is to actually to pull that forward through this next few weeks so that we can start to kind of, you know, reset the agenda a little bit. But what were you going to say then?
I was just going to say Australia has one of the better targeted welfare systems in the world. Hmm. We're also one of the lowest OECD tax countries in the world. I was just reviewing Treasury's view on that tonight before the show, and a Treasury report from last year, 2013, notes that we're the fifth lowest tax take of the 30-some OECD countries. So, you know, I think it's easy to talk about the vast amount of money that's going toward welfare payments, but I think we've got to be clear about what a welfare payment system is for. And its purpose is and has always been to assist fellow Australians who are in tough times, whatever reason, whether they're a single parent, whether they're living with mental ill health for a period or a very long and fluctuating period, whether they're people, you know, on the age pension, or not the subject of this review, people who are unemployed, people who, for, you know, reasons outside their control too often, have become single parents and are struggling to raise children. So, you know, it really is about that old Aussie, you know, lending a helping hand when it's needed. And what I think one of the things that has changed is we have people sitting on payments now, receiving payments for much longer periods than was the case decades ago. But that is explainable because of the nature of the reason people are on them and the changes in our community. So I think, you know, this review and other reviews that we've had, this kind of looking at the welfare system again is incredibly important, but I think it is really important that we get it right. You know, the review talks about a job being an incredibly important pathway out of welfare dependence. That's absolutely true. But we don't want to fall into the trap of thinking we can match everybody into work very quickly. I'm sure we can. There'll be a tranche of people that might be possible for, but there'll be another much larger group of people for whom the pathway into the world of work in a sustainable way is going to be long, and it might be, you know, three or four steps forward, one step back. But if we persist, if we're hopeful, we can get it right.
Roland, I'd just like to pick up on some of those elements before we take some calls.
Yeah.
And if you'd like to give us a call, 1-300-800-222 is the number. We'll take your calls in just a moment. But Roland, this issue of work, the first question that raises themselves for the three categories that people that are the report seems to be taking an interest in, those who are young, those who are disabled, and the Indigenous, the question is, are there enough jobs in the market at the moment for those people? That's the first question that raises itself. And the second question that raises itself is one I think Lynn alluded to earlier, that is the changing nature of work itself. Mm. Where you see manufacturing industries in decline in areas like South Australia or Geelong in Victoria, one has to ask, are the sorts of people who are losing their jobs, and they are aged in their 40s and 50s, and are they the sort of people who can be skilled up to take the jobs in the new technologies that are emerging, many of which require tertiary academic qualifications to get in? So even if we are moving to a new economy, the disjunction there for some people is going to be dreadfully painful.
It is, and so I think that's really important not to cast a judgment and not to run a debate which is casting a judgment on people who aren't in work. I also think another element that ties into that is the development of the insecure, casualised work domain, which might be the only place that a lot of these people can find work, and the insecure, casualised nature of it means that housing becomes insecure as well. Their whole lives become insecure. They never get in that kind of work. They are never given the opportunity to develop to a higher level or to take extra responsibilities or to learn more or to move into another domain. So, you know, I'm concerned that we're going to end up with a two-tier work environment where there are people who become a kind of a working poor, who become vulnerable and who have no great future ahead of them. And I don't think that's the way to build on the opportunities that people who aren't in work now with the right kind of support and opportunities can become.
Reminds me of a great line in a Joseph Heller novel, not Catch-22, in another one of his books where he says, to have a rich society requires a large number of very poor people.
Yes, yes, and that's a fear. You know, that's a concern, let's just put it that way. And I think we need to keep that in our mind as we're talking about and making decisions as a society about what are the ways that we support people into work, to use the words from this review. We need to support people into work which is meaningful and sustainable for them, because that is the way to get a better economic return for them, and certainly a better way to get a better social return for them and their families as well.
Can I just note, John, that there are two areas in Australia where we've got huge workforce issues, where we just don't have enough workers and we're unable to find enough Australians to skill up, and they are aged care and disability. Mm. As Australia moves faster and faster towards a national disability insurance scheme, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing, we're going to be thinking completely differently about how to work with and partner with Australians living with some sort of impairment. And that's going to require a totally different workforce and a much larger workforce. As Australia's bulge of boomers kind of hits the age that's going to need ageing supports and services both in a community setting and in a residential setting, we need more workers. In both those emerging and growing industries, there are many, many low-skill, relatively low-waged entry points into those industries, and both those industries have or will have kind of step-up points where people are going to be able to skill up. So I think there'd be real merit in the review team looking at that. Is it possible to match up some of those opportunities for work with some of these population groups that we would like to assist off welfare payments and into the world of work? And what might those pathways look like? How can we get organisations delivering aged care and disability support services to be working with government and with unemployed Australians and with job services to provide an environment that's going to work?
Where you could deliver, say, a basic Certificate 3 level training and get in. Yes, I mean, that's a good idea. I mean, it's although it is a level of training above that required to be a financial planner, I noticed today. There's a role for everybody else. Let's talk about the young, the disabled and the Indigenous. The Indigenous particularly we haven't touched on as yet, and what sort of problems may be occurring for Indigenous Australians in this area. For young Indigenous, you've not only have people living in remote areas, you do have a whole range of problems for those who are urbanised as well. Roland, for Anglicare, what sort of scope do you see here in this area?
I think, like all human beings, it is about what people bring to their situation, what people's capacities are, who they're connected to, what's important, what's meaningful in their lives, as well as understanding their circumstances. So certainly I reckon, you know, Aboriginal people, Torres Strait Islander people right across Australia would be, you know, more represented in social housing, more represented on the tough edges. That's in urban settings as well as in remote communities. But at the same time, there is a lot of particular qualities that, and cultural connections, particular voices, there's a lot of things there to draw on. So I guess much as we were saying with the in our general kind of employment support services, it's really about linking into where people are and what they need and providing the support to around their capacities and their particular qualities is really the way. One of the things that there's a lot of reconciliation action planning been going over the past few years. One of the things that process asks people to look at is who do they employ and who do they get their services from, who do they get their goods from. So, you know, spend your money where it counts and employ the people where it counts. So yeah. I think there's lots of possibilities. It's really about having some priorities.
Our guests on Sunday night are Lynn Hatfield-Dodds of Uniting Care and Roland Manderson of Anglicare Australia. And we're talking about the government's interim report on welfare services. The McClure document. Churches in this arena. Patrick McClure, long history with Mission Australia, came up with another report, Lynn, as you mentioned, 15 years ago. What were the directions of that report, which may give us some indication as to the philosophy underlying this one?
Oh, well, that's a very interesting question, John, because Patrick himself has been at some pains to not distance himself from his last report, but be very clear that this report is not Mark II of that one, that the context has changed. So probably the biggest recommendation out of his first report for a coalition government was essentially a single payment with add-ons. Now, that idea was a bit challenging, I remember, when it came out to the community sector, but subsequently, you know, in the years following that, by about the mid-2000s, most of the community sector were calling for a simplified system with a single base payment and add-ons. Patrick has said recently, look, the context has changed. I'm not saying we should go to that. We need to look at it. And it looks like they're going to stream or going to be providing advice to the Australian government to stream in around four or five streams. And they've certainly been looking to New Zealand as well as to the UK, to those systems, to see what they can learn from them, which is where I think they've got the investment approach and the capability approach from.
I'd like to talk about that New Zealand background, which has got some news in a moment, but let's try again to see if we can make our system work here. And it's high to Barry in Mount Isa. Barry, just tell us what your observations are.
I know governments of whatever persuasion have to be careful with government and public money, and I know they have to try and make things efficient and effective and sustainable. But when it comes to the poor and the underprivileged, and I don't want you to sound bleating, but I would classify myself in that respect because I'm on a disability pension. I don't get a lot of money, and because I suffer from a physical impairment. I got injured in a car accident a number of years ago and suffer reoccurring physical problems. And I've also suffered over a number of years psychological problems in the form of bipolar schizoaffective psychosis, which I have been hospitalised for a number of occasions. And so it's not easy. But I generally think that when it comes to people on disabilities and also other people on other low incomes, if they have a difficulty getting work and that sort of thing, then the government shouldn't be too punitive, and they shouldn't sort of attempt to persecute and punish people for circumstances sometimes beyond their control.
We'll take that as a comment, Barry. Thanks for your observations. We've got lots of calls on the board and lots of SMS calls as well, so thank you for that. One SMS from Tim. As usual, the coalition has to step up and rein in welfare and health waste and public service bloat that always occurs under Labor. The coalition must flush out welfare malingerers and able people on disability pensions when they are capable of being employed. I would say reflects, Roland.
Like to say that people on disability, there's so many people on disability pension or who have a disability even if they're not on the pension who really want work and can't get it. The jobs aren't there for them. The people have, there's a lot of stigma, particularly mental illness, but there's stigma on all sorts of disabilities and backgrounds, and you know, so I think if the jobs were there, if there were more jobs there, if people who really wanted to work could find work, then those kind of criticisms might ring more truly.
What's the experience of those who are working in employment services? They're the people who have the knowledge on the ground, and over the years a number of church agencies have come in and out of the employment services area, but you're all well connected. There are networks that apply here. Lynn, what's the general experience of sort of church welfare and unemployment services?
Some years ago, between the big the big four who were in welfare, employment service at the time, which was the Salvation Army, the Catholic Church, the Uniting Church, and the Anglican Church. We had, between us, we were delivering about 20% of the employment services across Australia. We did a big research piece, I can't remember the exact date, around the mid-2000s from memory, maybe the early 2000s. But what we found was really interesting. We found that less than 4% of the people that we were providing employment services to, and these were some of the more disadvantaged people across the country, less than 4% were what the then employment minister was terming deliberately non-compliant. That is, less than 4% were people who were trying to rule the system. And what we further found when we did some work after that research piece and then evaluated is when we provided extra supports and services for those people ourselves, we knocked that 4% number down to 1%. So I think what tells me loud and clear is almost everybody tries to do the right thing, even in very adverse circumstances. So I think we've got to get over this idea there's lots of malingerers and lots of people wasting our time. I said before and I'll say it again, Australia has a very well-targeted welfare system. It is actually very difficult to access a disability payment. I'm not sure that anybody thinks people on payments are not deserving of them. Certainly Minister Andrews, I don't think, has ever said anything like that in public. His concern, or the government's concern, I think, is are there people who have a short-term impairment that we might be able to move off payments? And that's a slightly different question.
Mm. Although, can I just add to that then, the interesting thing I think about the disability support pension, if you are on the pension, then you can have some greater security of housing. You can have some greater security of other kind of supports and access to medical support and things like that. So if we're going to change the game a little bit and try and get more people off that pension into, say, New Start allowance, then we have to make sure that they can still maintain that kind of same kind of support, the same kind of security, because otherwise it's just setting them up to fail. And I think that's porosity, the edges need to become a lot softer. And maybe this review is the way to do it, so that people can make efforts to and take risks without risking everything when they if they are no longer on the pension.
Let's get through a few calls because a number of you have been waiting for a very long time. Let's say hi to Mark in Kuranda. Hello, Mark. Welcome.
Well, the thing is, I lost my job because of my medical condition. I have reoccurring DVT, and I try to get onto the disability pension, and they rejected me, so I'm staying on the New Start allowance, and I can't afford to stay on that because of my mortgage, I'm not good to find a new job, so I'm not sure what's going on. Like it's very hard, and I just don't have the money for this thing.
So you're saying deep vein thrombosis, was a reason why you were rejected from the disability support pension. That is, they didn't regard that.
Well, no, the thing was, they said I was doing ongoing tests, and because there was ongoing tests, even though it was proven that I have it and it's recurring, because I was doing some other tests for things that related to it, they rejected me from the disability pension.
So it was episodic nature of the illness that rejected you. We will take another call. Thanks for your observations there. To Eve. Hello, Eve. Welcome. Eve.
Hello, John.
Yeah, hi.
Hello, John.
Sorry for the delay. What would you like to say?
Oh, yeah, it's very interesting listening to everyone talking. I have to just say myself, living with family after a workplace injury, and now I've found a job part-time. I'm doing voluntary work that I've done for a year as well to gain experience, and I'm doing an aged care course, which I've had to fund myself because I've done a Cert 3 in children's services nearly 20 years ago. So it's been really, really tough emotionally and physically, And doing the new job in where it's repetitive work, I'm finding I'm actually getting another physical complaint.
Yes, it builds up, doesn't it? So that too much of this is one of the stories we hear about people who could fall through the cracks. We've run out of time. I've got to thank particularly Roland Manderson and Lynn Hatfield-Dodds tonight, who've done a sterling job standing in the breach while our calls fell over, some of them, and also while we couldn't pick up on one of our participants in the discussion. Lynn Hatfield-Dodds of Uniting Care, Roland Manderson of Anglicare, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
No worries, John. Good night.
Thank you very much, John. And thank you, Roland.
Thanks. It's a pleasure, John.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio.